Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of yore, so that I may remember who I am.
Friends, allow me now to introduce you to James Flaming Eagle Mooney, elder and Seminole medicine man. How are you, my brother?
And you know what? We're just going to have James here in spirit. He is traveling. Whoever's been told about what he's doing has been told for a reason. But I don't want to divulge what's going on because he's being honored. And anyway, we've got a guest who's very close to. Oops. You know what? I've been sitting here. And I apologize, Jeff. The show started about a minute ago. Yeah. I hadn't pushed the right button. But anyway, I was just telling folks, I'll have to go in. Every once in a while, I make a mistake. But I was just telling folks that James isn't here tonight and that we're going to honor him through music, but that Jeff Standing Tall Gardner is here from Oklahoma Native American Church in Huntington to tell us about his path. How are you, Jeff?
Oh, I'm doing really good, actually.
Yeah.
We're underneath some blue skies. There's a sweat lodge going on behind me. Got some beautiful spirit in there right now.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I apologize for the first minute there, but I had been just talking with the medicine, you know, during the warm-up, and that might explain why we lost a minute there. So anyway, you know, it's an honor to have you talking with spirit tonight tell us about your path. This is your show.
I guess I should kind of start on how I came to these ways. You know, growing up when I was a young teen and what have you, I was pretty much my town's worst nightmare. I was really into alcohol. I drank a lot. I'd steal anything that wasn't tied down. I was well known as being the town's biggest liar. Hell, for that matter, I think I had all the qualifications of a politician. Anyway.
Sound like Damian Brinkley.
Anyway, in 1992, I was sentenced to prison. And I was on a pretty dark path. I was in some pretty addictive drugs at the time. I was into methamphetamines. I was drinking, burglarizing, assaults, you name it. That was part of who I was, you know. And I went to prison, and I kind of went out in the yard one day, and I just kind of put my energy out to the universe. I said, look, I need some guidance, you know, come to me. And the next day when I was coming back from the chow hall, I seen all these Native Americans, these Dene brothers, and they were sewing these blankets together. And I asked them what they was doing, and they said they was getting ready to make a sweat lodge. I asked them, I said, so what's a sweat lodge? And they said, well, it's that dome-shaped thing over there. Come on, help us out, and we'll teach you about it. And I crawled into a sweat lodge that Friday, and it was in 1992. I've been crawling in and out of lodges ever since. I found a connection in that lodge that I've just never been able to find anywhere else. You know? 1995, I met James Mooney. I was still in the prison system. In fact, I continued in the prison system for several years, in and out. Until in, I guess it was about 2001, 2002, one of my brothers from the lodge in there looked at me and says, you know, Jeff, I love seeing you, but, you know, every time you come back in here and see us, and I'm never going to get out, he says, you're throwing away every chance you ever get of being out there and being free. And I thought about that, you know, and, I got out and I started doing good. And then one day James Mooney asked me to run a branch off of the Native American church. And I'd been gifted a pipe by another one of my brothers from inside that lodge and asked to carry it in a good way. And so we put together the Aquila Native American Church of Huntington. And, you know, it wasn't very long after. It's kind of all history since then, but I got a beautiful group of people that, you know, we're trying to follow these ways in a good way. We've got some elders that come and teach us, you know, and we're all just trying to reach the same place, and that's being a better person tomorrow than we are today.
Now, I'm going to make an attempt at humor right here. You know, this church could explode someday. You just never know what's going to happen with the moves of the spirit. But yeah, I could see you as if you want to make an offhand reference to some historical figures. I could see you as Dennis Banks to Russell Means. You know, it could happen.
I sure hope not.
Yeah, that would be awful. That'd be awful. That'd be terrible.
I ain't no different than anybody else, and I make mistakes every day.
Yep.
You know,
you're right.
I just happen to be surrounded by a whole bunch of beautiful people that, when I fall down, they offer me a hand and help me get back up.
Absolutely.
You know? And, you know, I find these people in these ceremonies. You know, it doesn't matter where I go. When I go to a ceremony, you know, and there's people, you know, that are part of the Ark of the Native American Church, no matter what branch it is, they always welcome me with open arms, you know. And although we, you know, each branch may do things a little bit differently than the others, you know, that's because nobody's wrong, you know. They just do it differently. You know, and so I've been really honored in being able to meet the people that I've met, you know, in walking these circles.
Yeah. Well, you know, 75, that's when I knew him too. Believe it or not, that's when, when I knew James. And met him a time or two privately and went to a breath ceremony. And I'll bet you, you know, you could have been there. It was like an old schoolhouse up on the second floor. You went around the back. Yeah, that's what I knew him. I didn't know. I know during that period of time, he was busy. was busy, yeah.
Did he talk as much then as he does now?
No.
I love that.
No.
I love it.
No, he's really come out. He's you know, he was closely guarding his medicine. You know, he's just walking a path, and you know, sometimes an Indian might feel like he really shutting up about something, and he really feels, you know, we're just that way, you know. And yeah, I love James. He's I don't know, he's just cool. I don't know what else to say, you know, he's
well,
fun.
You know,
see, I lived in the same town. I lived there. You remember the place there in you didn't get out of the prison much, but you were aware that there was a place where you could get soft ice cream, and there was a little campground behind it, and that's where I live with my family in a 35-foot fifth wheel. So, but yeah, and that's during a time when my wife was dying and eventually passed away in April of 75, and James was there. He was there for me. He was, and I was acting like a jerk. And, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, I'm just talking about just some real vanities, you know. Everybody,
yeah.
You first out on the red road or haven't been out very long, you start imagining you're somebody, and that's just bullshit. Got to learn. I've been having my wife just tell me, hey, be yourself.
Sit down, you know, there's a reason why when we sit down in them circles and them ceremonies, why it's a circle. And you don't see anybody sitting up higher than anybody else.
All right.
That's because we're all five fingers, you know. We're all two-legged. We put our pants on the same way.
Wow. Yeah, you. Somebody ought to write a book. I can see you were. If you and him were to get together eventually, you guys are going to need one. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I hope not.
You know what? No, all I know is years and years ago, even before I came to the Native American ways, you know, I grew up out on that desert, you know, and the only place I ever found a connection with creation was when I was out there on the desert alone, you know, and years before I came to the ceremonies, you know, I had, I guess what you would call a vision, you know, a dream, if you will.
Oh,
and, you know, that dream, you know, it kind of manifested itself to me years later. You know, I got in a car wreck and some things happened to me, you know, during that car wreck, you know. And you know, that dream came back to me. And then, you know, it wasn't long after that that I was actually introduced to cannabis the first time, you know. And I met a lot of people that you know, utilized that medicine in a really cool way. You know, I don't know, you'd call them mountain folk, but, you know, we was out in the desert, so more like desert folk, you know. And you know, that was even before my trip to prison, you know. And I spent 11 years in prison because I wouldn't quit smoking weed. It was this vision I had. You know, and then I came to these Native American ways. And, you know, it was through these Native American ways that it made it possible for us to utilize these earth-based healing sacraments that we can. I don't know where to go from there, but...
Well, you know, if you haven't read the history, there's all kinds of stuff up on the Internet about the church. And... I can't remember James's URL. Mine's nativeamericanchurch.us. That's just something I threw up in my version. You know, James just said, hey, you know, it doesn't have to be about anything you eat or drink or smoke, you know, as much as if you want to have a radio show or, you know, whatever you feel like doing in the church, just do it. Just get in. You know, there's a...
Close your heart.
You know what I mean? Yeah. What the heck?
You know, that's really what it's about, you know. You know, before I ever met James, I was part of a group of people, and it was known as the Church of the Rising Moon. And, you know, the basis of that church was to, you know, to provide an umbrella of protection for the people in our area, you know, to be able to worship in the way that they saw fit. And then, you know, I go with James, and then, you know, these churches merged. And, you know, the Church of the Rising Moon became the Office of the Native American Church of Huntington. And, you know, I guess I guess the best way to kind of give an example of what it is give you an idea of kind of what we have as a general statement of beliefs within the Office of the Native American Church of Huntington. I'll pull that up and I'll read it for you. What it is it's Office of the Native American Church of Huntington's general statement of beliefs. To understand our spirituality, you must first understand to us, spirituality is a way of life, not just something that's only recognized and practiced on certain days, but rather at all times. To understand our way of life, you must understand the nature of the code that governs that way of life and appreciate what that code truly represents and why. We believe that we owe a debt to the land, for the land is the creator of and provider for all life. We believe that when one takes from the land, one must give something back in return. This belief is traditional. It is ritual. Our lives are given us, therefore we must give life back again. We accomplish this through a life marked by service to the land, endeavoring each in our own way to see to it that the land is preserved. Our belief is that our Mother Earth is a living, breathing entity, and that all of nature has the spirit of the Creator as well as its own spirit within. We believe in both the male and female aspects of the Creator, and that each of us have not only positive and negative, but male and female aspects within. Our goal as individuals is to achieve balance in our lives and in the lives of those who surround us. A circle begins and ends and begins again in the same place. Life is as a circle that begins, ends, and begins again with the Great Mother, the First Mother, who, with the Lord, created all life. Blessed Mother Earth is our beginning and our end. From her we come, to her we shall return. In all ways she provides for us. We are her children. All life springs from her. She gives freely of her abundance. From her body we take sustenance, food, water, and shelter. From her spirit comes gifts of wisdom and warmth, talents and skills, fire and friendship. But the greater gifts come from her all-encompassing love. Our great Earth Mother takes joy in her children's happiness. She delights in our enjoyments, and therefore she has given us her wondrous gift of pleasure. We honor her, show her reverence when we share her gift. But to the blessed among us, she has given her greatest gift, endowed them with her own miraculous power to create life. We and the land are mutually dependent. Therefore, we must always strive to protect and nurture that which provides protection and nurture unto us, our Mother Earth. We follow this code by honoring the reed, and ye harm none, and by recognizing the divine in all creation. We show this recognition outwardly through ritual and dedication to the preservation of our Earth Mother. Our lives are dedicated to the Lord and Lady, the Great Creator. And through this dedication, we receive manifold blessings, blessings of knowledge and wisdom, of love, peace, and happiness, as well as many, many others. By enriching the life around us, our own lives are enriched. We believe in the threefold law of karma. Whatever we do, good or bad, returns to us threefold. Following the practices of the ancients, we believe that all natural medicine, herbs, stones, shells, etc., which has been gathered and prepared through ritual and prayer to be sacred. The use of these sacred medicines is an integral part of our worship and shall be respected and protected as such. This use shall include but not be limited to infusion, immersion, inhalation, or ingestion. All use of sacred medicine shall be done in a respectful manner, remembering that these things are gifts from our Mother Earth to be respected and used in ritual and prayer. Most importantly, we believe that each person is on their own path, and it is for the Creator to dictate this path by speaking to the heart and thus showing the way. By seeking out knowledge and listening to our own hearts, do we gain wisdom. With wisdom, the knowledge of our own path. Oho, Dr. Ross.
Well, that certainly was profound. I was dumbstruck there for a little while. Which translates to, I forgot that I was talking for a minute, but forgot to. Where's that button again? Well, I love to do that. But anyway, yeah, boy, that's quite a manifesto. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah, you were there. Yeah. I encourage. You know, and we're to give you some idea of scale. We'll probably get within the next month, probably 250 people, maybe more, will listen. And, you know, we've got live listeners now. And, Jeff, whenever you want to, you can invite people to call in, and but don't until you're ready.
You know what, the truth of the matter is, you know, I prayed about this, and the Creator told me, you know, go ahead and do this, you know, so I'm open. You know, if people want to call in and they have questions about what we're doing, you know, please do so. You know, I can stop at any time. You know, there's a couple other things I'd kind of like to read to people, you know.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure we go off the time. The thing is these ceremonies, you know, I need people to understand, you know, although I may do certain things and I may be, you know, I advocate the use of cannabis. You know, not all of the churches do so. You know, some ask that you don't use cannabis when you come around it, you know, and we respect that. You know, that's part of recognizing the divine in all creation. We have to respect each other's rights as individuals.
Oh.
You know, part of the Native American Church of Huntington is that, you know, a big part of ours is the fact that we utilize the cannabis sacrament. And, you know, I want to read this, what we have listed as our significant sacrament. The reason I do this is because it brings out the distinction, you know, between the different churches, if you will. Sacraments. Marijuana, cannabis, is the significant earth-based healing sacrament for the Ocala Native American Church of Huntington. Peyote is the significant indigenous earth-based healing sacrament for Ocala Earth Walks Native American Church. For thousands of years, mankind has sought out desert, forest, jungle, and savanna for healing and communion with our Creator. Indigenous peoples of this continent, Central America, and South America for millennia have used earth, the sky, the water, and fire to create favorable conditions, whether for healing and or for vision. They are one and the same. All of the plant kingdom, all minerals, all clay of Mother Earth is to be used in healing, not only for disease and sickness, but also for the separation between Great Spirit and man. The mystery called truth lives and dwells in these gifts of the Creator. This is self-apparent. It is plain and clear. Indigenous experiences of healing are sacred and real. A great movement is upon all mankind, involving a reckoning of reconciliation. If I can spit out.
That's all right.
And intense healing at this moment in time. Mankind comes full circle to the question, what are we? Born of intelligent design, humankind is at a pivotal point in its evolution and maturing. Succeeding is not in question. We will heal. We will reunite with the Great Spirit and live in peace. Peyote, as well as other sacraments of the Ocala Native American Church, offers passage into new life, an experience of healing to depths few individuals have even imagined, let alone accomplished. Whole plants or certain parts of plants of that living entity, the seven colors of clay, crystals and gems, ancient sounds and other ingredients come together in a variety of ways tailored to every individual and his or her own unique set of circumstances. Changes in personal lifestyle are a key part in every participant's success in their healing visionary journey. All this and more is offered here on this set, with the participants to succeed. The council offered empowers taking personal responsibility for one's own healing, ignorance, and unknowing will no longer be a barrier. Aho, McCaffrey.
Yeah, well, I like that. Those are a lot of options. Yeah, that definitely opens up options for folks.
You know, James Mooney originally put together that sacrament statement, and he wrote that statement, and it was basically from where I said peyote on down, you know, is his words. We put in the cannabis to distinguish us ourselves and doctor the Native American Church of Huntington as having a different sacrament than that of Octagon Earthwalk's Native American Church. This was, you know, this was done all, you know, it was all through prayer, and it wasn't just me, you know, there was several people that was involved, you know, and they all talked about it, and they all agreed, you know, that these are the statements that we would put up, and, you know, that this is what we represent with this church, you know.
Yeah, hey, where two or more are gathered.
These
are
kind of preliminary things of what happened, you know, before I ended up going to court, you know, which is what you have, you know, when you talk about how I got the torch to kind of back off of me a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
All these happened before, you know, before there was ever a court case. You know. I have one other that I want to kind of read, and I want to point out that we borrowed this from the Hawaiian Church out in Oahu, Hawaii, and we modified it. And, you know, the directors of the Occupy Native American Church of Huntington, as well as the majority of people involved with that church, you know, all agreed that this would be our statement regarding the cannabis sacrament. Grandmother Rosa Maria, members of the Ocala Native American Church of Huntington are encouraged to use the Grandmother Cannabis Sacrament in spiritual meditative practices because we believe that sacramental use of Grandmother Cannabis, 1, helps evolve the soul. Sacramental cannabis augments one's faith and contributes to the evolution of one's soul as one communes with one's inner self and one's spiritual connection with the universe. 2, is an exercise in acquiring spiritual attributes by sharing. Sharing sacramental cannabis contributes to communion with spirit and fellowship with others in the spiritual association of the brother-sisterhood of humankind. This practice leads to the discovery and creation of one's spiritual path. 3, creates peace. The hand cultivation of sacramental cannabis exerts an ennobling and expanding influence on people. The agriculturist is a peace-loving person. A nurturing association with the sacramental cannabis plant instills patience, quiet, peace, reverence, meditation, spiritual awareness, enlightenment, and awareness of the life force. There is great therapeutic value in growing your own sacrament when it is done in conscious partnership with collective spirituality. 4, enhances spiritual receptivity. One's inherent imagination and spiritual receptivity is influenced by growing, harvesting, and ingesting the cannabis sacrament. The bioelectro-neurochemical effects of ingestion enhances the interface between mind and spirit and augments spiritual receptivity. The effect may be likened to what happens to the image in a microscope when a drop of oil is added on an oil immersion lamp. It is magnified and amplified to the eye of the beholder. 5, serves humanity as a means of knowing. People benefit from utilizing sacramental cannabis in conjunction with body-mind healing values of cannabis. Cannabis sacrament as medicine, nourishment for the body and the spirit should be available to those who need it for relief from AIDS, glaucoma, nausea, radiation and chemotherapy, stress, muscle spasticity, asthma, loss of appetite, migraine headaches, menstrual-related discomforts, diabetes, epilepsy, and many other human maladies. One of the Occidental Native American Church of Huntington's holy duties is to provide the blessing of its cannabis sacrament to those suffering and need of its benevolent blessings. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I can understand why you did that. That was a good statement. That was a good statement. Well, I wish I would have met you back then. I just was running around. Gee, who knows? Yeah, there was a lot of interesting things going on in Santa Fe County that summer. Yeah, still is. San Pete, you know, geez, if you're from Utah or you've hung around Utah for a lot of years and never really had the desire to get out of the Salt Lake Valley, you know, San Pete was kind of the magic place, you know. But you know, San Pete, so it's backwater.
We went out, we actually went out there, do some hot pockets out there. We went out there and did a ceremony out there at the hot pockets. Beautiful ceremony.
I know.
Amazing. Yeah. A lot of people there. There was some 30 people. We even had some guests from Russia.
You want to know something really strange? My second wife Betty's ashes were scattered in that area by her sons.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
But it rained so hard that day, and I had a big V8. Truck that I was feeding for gas, and we were having we were all on the road, but the weather was real bad. After we kind of had a funeral in three stages, and you know, when we went to scatter them, you know, the kids said, "No, we want to do them up with the hot pots because that's where they went," you know. So,
yeah.
But you probably run into who knows, maybe the Eisenbergs. Who knows? If you ever hear the name Eisenbergs, that's my son-in-law. Good guys.
Oh,
yeah, shout out to the Eisenberg clan. Yeah, you know who you are. Yeah, you know who the Eisenberg clan is. They're James Arness's cousins.
Oh, yeah?
They're married into that crazy family, and they're great people. Just great people. And
well, over there in Emory County, where I'm from, you know, that's all outlaw country for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a certain thing the desert does to you.
Yeah, it allows you to see through people's illusions, so you don't buy into all the dogma and drama that most people want to think is reality.
Yeah. You ever notice that I feel inclined right now to bring up Jesus, because you know when he wanted you to do something, he would say, "Don't do this," you know. And most Christians, you know, look at the Bible and they say, "Oh, you know, if there is any word that comes out of the desert, don't believe it." Well, you know, that's the old Hebrew way of telling you. You need to go to the desert.
Right.
Because it's always opposite. If it sounds strange, it's opposite. And I lived 22 miles south of Moab for almost 3 years at LaSalle Junction on 300 acres of mining property that had been left abandoned for years and years and years. And my friend ran Rockland Ranch nearby. He was a polygamist. he blasted five homes out of a rock that was 400 foot tall and about 1,200 foot long, and from the air looked like a giant tortoise making a left hand turn. It's called Rocklands, right? And the place is famous.
Yeah, I'm actually quite familiar with the LaSalle area. I used to do a little bit of oil field work out there in Naderita, Colorado. So I traveled through LaSalle once a week.
I'll bet you you didn't do something I did.
Probably not.
This is crazy. You know what, you want to know what crazy is? Crazy is about September or so, and you know how hot it gets out there then. But you know the rains have come, and there is water down in the in those fissures and cracks.
Twenty foot
down.
Yeah.
I threw an inflatable raft down in one of those and climbed out in that mother. You know, I'll bet it was probably the most fool dangerous thing I ever did in my life.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that wasn't crazy. That was insane, my friend.
Yeah. But, you know.
You know, it's funny you talk about, water out on the desert. You know, people don't understand how dangerous water really is. When you're from the desert, you understand how dangerous water is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, jeez. You know, I could have disappeared, and my wife and them, they wouldn't have known. They'd probably put it together, knowing I'd bought a boat, and I probably went out in the desert, and the desert probably collapsed on me. I'm probably lucky it didn't happen. I went to the desert. You know, it's the old mysterious, well, you have to go to the desert and see whether the desert's going to let you proceed any further.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you go out.
Yeah,
be careful, though. You always got to be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not kidding. That was quite an experience living out there. 22 miles south of Moab. There's a little junction there, and there's like, two houses. And, you know, one of them is a mobile home. The others, you know, the Applegates that live there, the family been there forever.
I was going to say, is there even a permanent foundation?
Actually, no, there wasn't. It was just a mobile home. Yeah. And, we nearly burned the place down. I decided I was going to run some chickens, you know. And so, something happened with that heat lamp, man. And, you know, I didn't think I was doing anything wrong, but there was a fire. And we returned about 20 minutes after it happened. And Fire Marshal told us, no more growing chickens, period. They banned chickens. So anyway, yeah, I suppose they thought that was a criminal act, but when you actually think about it, you know, fire marshal's got the legal right to tell you when you could burn. You got, you know, you need to burn responsibly, folks. You know, I don't know that I've ever heard anybody actually talk about fire safety, but you know, hey, there's folks out there. You know, when you walk this road, you kind of learn from other guys, and it takes a while to pick up on it. So, you know, we're not discouraging younger folks that are full of piss and vinegar from not having fires, but we want you to do it responsibly. And you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And listen, hey, I'm sure by now we've attracted some flies. And, folks, if you are listening, please give us a call. The number is right at the top of the screen. Or you can Skype in. And there's a little S right next to kind of the top center of the screen. You'll see the phone number. Anyway, yeah, give us a call if you feel like it. But the nice thing about Blog Talk is, you know, people can show up for the live show if they really want to. And there are people that do. Oh, geez. When I kind of revived the show back in April, late March, we were having 3, 4, 5 people on the line at the same time and having a party and whooping up and just having a good time. But I want to apologize to everybody. You know, I was going to try to have one live show a week, and I've been doing reruns. I've got 150 shows to rerun, and I'm sure people are getting tired of it. And just, but I, you know, I've been doing a lot of personal, you know, prayer and, you know, activities to get myself ready for the future, and hope to be able to get some. Because I know people do like to hear from me once in a while, and they deserve that. So, and I just love. Oh, you know what? I told Mark I was going to call, and I got out there, And I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to any of our shows, but Mark lives out in Colorado, and this guy is like he's a human Mayan calendar. This guy really soaked up. He's like the Spock of the Mayan calendar, you know. Let me see if I can get him. I'm embarrassed, man. I should have called him a long time ago. Okay. All right, let's see what happens here. Fine. Come on, Mark Borch. Mayan calendar Uber mention. He may get up.
Hi, we're not here. Please leave your name, phone number, and a message, and we'll return your call.
Mark, are you there? Are you really there, Mark? Or is that just your machine? Go on. Hey, listen, Mark, you know you're welcome to call in. And we're talking with Jeff Standing Tall Gardner this evening. And he is telling us about the inception. I mean, the story behind the story of what happened. And it's a great story. It really is. It's I'm an old duffer, you know. I've never been much on golf, but even if I was big on golf, I'd lay back and wouldn't push, you know. But put a bow and arrow in my hand now, you and I are going to tangle, because that's the one thing I shined in my life was shooting a bow. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's just something I came up with, and I was really lucky, and because I was in with that crowd. But, you know, 10 or 20 steps back nationally from the guy that won the Olympics in 72 and some other guys. And I love the sport. It's a great sport. It was Cherokee-dominated for a long time.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, just a little bit of history people don't know. You know, Ray Rogers in 69 and Joe Thornton, you know, both from Tahlequah. Joe Thornton was even earlier. He was world champion in, I guess, the early 60s and came back as national champion in 72 or 71. And, you know, these guys stand out there and they're popping arrows into a four-foot target 100 yards away. And the goal's a pie plate. And they're hitting it five times out of six. I'm serious.
Hey, I got a question for you, Blue Water.
Yeah.
Are you still on the phone with your friend?
Huh?
Are we still leaving?
Yeah.
Are we still leaving a message?
I know, but it probably. Let me check and see. And I'll drop that line. That's the 303 line. I'm going to drop that line. Okay. You're still there. Yeah, I don't want to block him from. I'm glad he was listening to all that. So I don't know whether he's home tonight or not, but he's sure fun to have on the show, because he'll tell you exactly how you are wired.
He
nails it. It's really neat. It's it's just one of those things that shows that there's intelligent design. I'm a big fan of intelligent design, and. I'm all making peace within the religious community, and there's millions of to do, but a lot of times people are just afraid to, because it don't take long once the religion gets rooted that especially if it's a real popular one, that if you're a little bit different, you're not hip or cool or something. And I know that's what got 50 million of our people killed. But we're not going to dwell on that.
Yeah,
welcome back. And we're not just we're going to take names. This is like in the past. Anyway, we're back. We're going to take names.
Well, you know, it's because of the sacrifices that people have made before that's made these ceremonies possible for everybody. You know, it's because of sacrifices, like our ancestors that walked on that trail, they kept these ceremonies alive. They kept this way of life alive, you know, and now we get an opportunity to be a part of that. and to learn from it, you know. And the truth of the matter is it's a beautiful way to walk.
Yeah. Well, there was a door open about that time, and when James got that blessing up in the, was it North? I don't North in the Dakotas. I don't know where he went, but he got that blessing from that elder, and that was a real big deal. And what happened?
That was a blessing.
Yep.
And that was later affirmed by our Uncle Richard, who has the Foundation Swallow.
Yep.
And there was a lot that went on in that, you know. I mean, that family, you know, they were threatened. All kinds of things happened, you know. The government didn't want that to go through the way it did, you know. But that just kind of opened the doorway. And when they opened that doorway, they made it possible for all of us.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, there's people wonder, you know, but there's a movie that people should watch. It's called American Evil. And it's kind of a fictionalized story, you know, inspired by actual events. And it kind of tells the story of how the government tried to, take away the spirituality from the native people. You know, they put them in the Bureau of Indian Affairs schools and, you know, they'd get in trouble even if they even spoke their own language, you know. So I recommend everybody watch that show. It's called American Evil.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch for that one. I'm surprised I haven't seen it yet. But, yeah, I bet there's a lot of good stuff coming out of, motion picture is not something everybody can get into. But, geez, if you've got a good drama and can put it on the screen and it's a Native American theme, it's pretty cool. Yeah. I've basically been, I guess what got me into this was I was one of the millions of Billy Jack fans. And I guess I just never lost my that message that was put forth by Tom Laughlin, and bless his heart, he's in his 80s. And though we have never had any, you know, direct contact, we both had the same brother, and that was Rolling Thunder. And I was privileged to come along, you know, 15 years after all that, but it was cool.
Wow.
And I know a few others.
All my screen heroes. I like Billy Jack.
Well, where do you, listen, why don't we play, you want to play about two or three minutes of James music clips? Just,
yeah, that'll work. And maybe when we come back, we can go into what happened with that court case.
Okay, good deal. We'll be gone. This is only about a minute. I've got four clips and a finale that we can work with tonight. This is clip number one.
The sacred fire's burning deep within my soul. The fight of the eagle guides my way. I hope.
What a story. And you were right there at the beginning, and you're the unsung, you're a hero just not as sung, you know. And but I sure am glad. I'm just, you know, it's been, you know, since 75 really we've had any contact with James up until, I don't know, a few months ago. And boy, it sure was good to hear from him because we, but yeah, he was really going to be honored someplace. And I know when he feels like the time is right. And that might be next month, it might be next year, but he will come on the show and tell us about it. But well, where were we, Jeff?
Well, we kind of talked a little bit about you know, how the church all came about, you know, some of our general beliefs, you know, how we talk to the Native American church unintentionally. And I talked just before we went to the break there, I said that we'd talk a little bit about the court case itself. Now, earlier we talked about, you know, I mentioned that, you know, I spent 11 years inside prison over a period of 13 years, and most of that was because I smoked marijuana. With these ceremonies, I got involved with them because of what they did for me to help me get rid of anger issues I had, you know. They helped me get rid of the alcohol addiction that I had. They got me away from the methamphetamines. They got me walking a good road. Hang on just a second. I'm being told we got a little background noise in the line.
Oh, no problem.
Let me turn my speaker down a little. That might help. All right.
Sound like you got some youngins there tonight.
Yeah, they're kind of running around in the yard here. Like I said earlier, we got a sweat lodge in the neighbor's yard. They're getting ready to crawl in and do ceremonies.
Oh, just a bunch of blanket Indians, you know? What can you say? That's the best
thing. Anyway, I got involved with these ceremonies, and, you know, it helped me straighten my life out. And I got married, and I had some beautiful children, and trying to raise them and teach them these ceremonies. I was going to school, and I got into a car accident. I wrecked my van. I actually belonged to the fire department in the town I lived in. And being an idiot, I reached down to pick up my accent, my fire department issue radio that had fallen on the floor. And when I did so, I took my eyes off the road just long enough for the car in front of me to stop and for me to rear-end them. Fire department in that town came, and they cut me out of the van and took me over to the hospital. They asked me if they could take a blood sample, and I said, yeah, no problem. And I asked the officer, I told him before he did so, though, he needed to be aware of some things. I presented him with my Aqua Native American Church authorized participant card. And he took half a second look at it and handed it back and said, yeah, I don't need to read any of that. So they took their blood sample, and a couple months later, I get a letter in the mail telling me I had to go to court. They was charging me for three infractions. They was charging me for possession of drug paraphernalia, a pipe with cannabis resin in it, following too closely with an accident involved, and driving with a measurable amount of controlled substance within my body, a metabolite.
Uh-huh.
I said, all right, you know, so I go to court. And, you know, several court proceedings, and, you know, got one of them defenders. actually, a guy that I worked really well with, say that he's a friend of mine, and me and him have done many of criminal court cases together, mainly him being my attorney and me telling him what I wanted to say. Well, we went to court. We took it to trial. And my attorney stood up and began to argue a standard chain of custody defense. He wanted to get rid of the evidence regarding the cannabis by showing that the chain of custody couldn't be proved, that it couldn't have been tampered with. And it was really weak, the case that he was presenting. And I asked him, I said, what's going on, you know, because I'd given him months and months worth of paperwork on how I wanted to fight this case. And the fact was, is I was standing up to the spiritual uses of cannabis. Well, he didn't believe that I would ever win that case. And so he didn't even really research it or try to fight it in that regard. And he kind of had this little argument off to the side without anybody really knowing what's going on. I wrote him a little note. I said, look, I'm trying to give you ideas. You know, I'm not trying to override you. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm just trying to give you some ideas. And I'll be a good damn attorney and listen to the ideas. And he leans back for a second. And, of course, by now I know I'm already set. You know, this is it's all just a puppet show. They're going to run me through the system, and they're going to find me guilty, and I'll go to the appeal level, which I was prepared for. I actually planned on taking the case all the way to the Utah State Supreme Court. Well, anyway, he leans over and he says, all right, Jeff, I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll put you on the stand, and you can present your case. All right, cool, we can do that. So it comes our turn, and he calls me to the stand, and I get up there. He asks me, he says, So, Mr. Gardner, you're part of a Native American church, right? Said, yeah, I'm part of the Native American Church of Huntington. And he says, and what is your capacity in that church? I told him, I said, well, I'm president of the Aquaba Native American Church of Huntington. It's basically my job to facilitate the ceremonies for these people that choose to worship in the manner that you do. And he says, and you have proof of this membership, right? Said, yeah, I do. I gave him my Aquaba Native American Church authorized participant card. And the judge was kind of funny. She actually asked the prosecution if they had any objections to entering that into evidence. And the prosecution, he says, no, I'm kind of curious to see where Jeff's going with this. Let's allow it. You know, they all kind of snickered like it wasn't going to be enough. So he enters it in. Well, the judge turns and looks at me and spends the next 10 minutes barking at me, telling me how you have to be full-blooded, blood Native American this, blood Native American that, in order to have anything to do with these ceremonies, for any of them clause to apply or this. I mean, a good 10 full minutes of her berating me on you know, how I had to be blood Native American. And then she kind of ended her tirade with words, unless you can show me a Supreme Court case that says otherwise. And I raised my hand and I said, Your Honor, I got one right here. Hang on a second, let me find it. And I started going through my file. And, my attorney beat me to it. He presented the State of Utah versus James Flaming Eagle Mooney and Aquaba Native American Church. And the conclusion of that was basically that there was no racial requirement for any other Native or any other church on the planet. Why did the Native American church have to have a racial quotient? Well, when they did that, the judge came back, and before we had even sat down, you know, you stand when they come in, and before we sat down, she says, I find you guilty of following too close with an accident. I find you not guilty of possession of paraphernalia, cannabis pipe with resin in it. Mr. Gardner, you do have the legal right to have in your possession Native American Church sacrament. I find you guilty of driving with a measurable amount of metabolite within your body. Well, with them words, she kind of flabbergasted us all because we didn't expect her to find me innocent and rule that I had the legal right to have it. And You know, I didn't say anything, but when we walked out, my attorney looked at me with a big old grin on his face, and he says, "Jeff, you got her. You've got guaranteed your appeal. How can she tell you you can have it but can't use it?"
Yeah.
She can't. We can appeal this. We can win it. But I want you to forget about appealing it." And he says, "Why?" And I says, "Well, because if you appeal it, that gives the district court a chance to overturn this case. But if we just ride it out and I go ahead and do whatever they order in my sentencing, then that becomes case law. That sets precedent nationwide because you can't change it once I've done all the sentence on it." And he smiled and said, "I understand your thinking." Well, so here it is. It's been a couple of years now. You know, that case is in the lower court. Does not mean that everybody has the legal right to utilize cannabis. What it means is that we all have a legal leg to stand on. It's up to the individual to stand up.
Yep.
Not be afraid, you know. Government can only do what you allow them to. And the truth of the matter is the laws are in place and they're in our favor to be able to utilize these medicines. Anyway, I know there's at least a couple of people that are online now. I know one was saying something about calling in. So
I keep hearing a strange noise. You know, they got on my end on the computer screen. I've got three columns. The left hand shows me and my line and your line. And I think I have had instances where someone will call in, and for some reason it doesn't burst through my browser page. And so I try to reload this page about every 5 or 10 minutes. And if you're trying to call in, I'm not answering you. It's because of problems with Blog Talk. But
I think part of the noise that you're hearing is that my Skype set up, so every time somebody messages me on Facebook,
that's it. Good. Okay. Good.
Skype, so.
Good. Yeah, I usually if somebody calls in on the show, I spend a long period of time not looking at the screen, but you know, no more than 2-3 minutes, I'm sure. But yeah, well, boy, you. I don't know. I guess you're kind of like Job. You know, every once in a few generations, somebody gets dragged through hell, so things can change. It sounded like they put you through. Oh, we do have someone on. We've got a visitor and area code 817. Where are you calling from?
Near Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to give away a first name?
Anthony. Usually I go by Anthony.
I knew an Anthony in South Texas years ago, and his wife had MS, and they visited us in Colorado. But they live way down south. Way in some kind of ceramics business or something. Anyway, good to have you on the line.
It's an honor to be on the line with you guys.
You can just hang here if you want. You know, just sit in council, and you feel like speaking up, speak up. If not, don't.
I've been listening, and I'm actually a member of the Native the Oklava Native American Church as well. I've recently been in contact with James Mooney and sent off a deposit to establish the branch.
For
North Texas. I'm a former POW
go ahead
of the direction.
I gotta have to, I have a phone call coming in. Just keep talking, friend.
Okay. I'm a former POW of the War on Drugs myself. I was kidnapped. They call it arrest last year. And I'm presently engaged with the judicial system. Right now, I'm kind of like laying low. to deal with these people because because of the statutory rules and regulations and things that are in place, and my history from when I was a teenager, I was entrapped by the DEA, and there was a whole thing that happened, you know, like back in 1993. And so I ended up getting wrapped up, sort of entangled into this web of their sort of a human trafficking and racketeering scheme, and learned a lot about their about the. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I've been studying the law for a few years now. Studying, you know, I study natural law. You know, that's the laws that I choose to live my life according to, natural law, in contrast to the statutory codes and things like this that are in place. And what I realized through ceremony and through working with medicine and engaging with spirit and counseling with spirit is ultimately what we have here on this land is an artificial matrix that's been superimposed here, and it was authored into existence through writing. The scribes wrote words on paper and give these words force and effect on people who consent to be, you know, or even the people that don't consent, they do it by force. And so I discovered that it's this use of words and how these words are projected, and they invite you to come to these places they call courts. And you might have a man in a black robe. They call him a magi, a magistrate. And they like to write spells. They call these spells a summons to appear. You know, things like this. It's this language that this law society uses and has used for a long time to steal people's identity away from them. And to, I mean, just think about all of the plant sacraments, the medicines, the sacred medicine that have been revenued into this sort of legal matrix, this legal system. I mean, all of the major sacred plants are regulated by this fictitious entity they call a state or a government, these idols, these things that don't even have a life. They don't have a heartbeat, a pulse, a brain, or anything. They just have these actors and agents who carry out the spell words, you know? I mean, are you guys following me on this?
Sure.
And so I've been sort of decoding and like sort of relearning language, how to, you know, that language and meaning are two different things. And, you know, people have been given a language. They create a school. They create a public school. I call it the public school system because they teach you this language that they want you to understand so that you'll just, you know, they can claim authority over you and steal your identity away by issuing you a driver's license or a birth certificate or any of these instruments that adhere you to their system and to the state. Contract. agreements that people make, you know, and that's what the whole thing is based upon, these agreements and these contracts, giving consent away. So at this time for my, you know, in my life, by forming a church or chartering rather a branch of the Aklava Native American Church, you know, these ceremonies have been here from the very beginning. You know, they're ancient. I mean, it was thought of before we even existed as living beings. And we have the right, because we were born on the soil. We don't have constitutional rights. We have an inherent right.
That's
really
right.
Like,
all that is true. You know that. I've been studying criminal justice for a while now, you know, and it's all part of this, you know. And basically
and
what criminal justice is learning how to speak legalese, that whole other language that you're talking about.
Yeah, I speak it fluently, actually.
Hey, Jeff, you said you were learning a whole lot about criminal justice. And it was also, they were learning a lot about you, too.
Well, you know, the one thing I can say that this state did, you know, is they took a man who had an interest in reading, and they put him in a place with a library full of law books and nothing else to do.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's kind of the same sort of thing that, you know, happened for me is, you know, I was incarcerated for 5 years when I was 19 years old for something that I wasn't even responsible for doing. And so I ended up, you know, coming out of their prison institution and didn't even realize it until like a couple of years after that I suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Which is part of the reason that I work with plant sacraments and because I don't choose, you know, I mean I don't want to put toxic pharmaceutical chemicals in my body to, you know, for any reason whatsoever, you know, when I know that the remedies for whatever kind of an ailment I may have is available naturally, you know.
Well, you know, the Creator gave us all of this life, we look around, you know, he gave it to us, you know, to respect, you know, and to be a part of it, you know, just like he gave all that life to us, you know. We're a gift of creation as well. As long as we can respect that creation and, you know, like I said earlier, endeavor each in our own way, you know, to become a better person tomorrow than we are today, then, you know, we are walking that good red road.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, it's really just about honoring thy neighbor as you honor yourself, you know, and just having respect, you know, for, you know, like having the connection to nature. I mean, people's connection, their umbilical cords to the natural world is practically just severed and you know.
Oh yeah, I see that all the time in the city. People, you know, they don't go anywhere without an ear attached to a phone, you know, and they don't ever look at anything around them, you know. I mean that literally. Even when they're walking, they walk with their eyes looking at the sidewalk. They don't ever enjoy the beauty that's even up here in these cities.
Or they're looking down into a phone. I see that a lot. There's people with their head down looking into a screen. It's like, you know, like zombies or something.
Zombies. There's that zombie word, eh?
Well, I mean, it is kind of like zombies. They are kind of like the living dead.
Yes, it
and,
is.
You know, there's a legalese term. There's a legalese term that I've heard used. I hear it all the time because I'm very keen to hearing that language. And there is one specific term that's used in all acts of legislation, and that term is person. A person is not the same as a man. A person comes from persona, which is Latin. It means a thing. It was a mask that actors wore when they were in a theater, and it projected sound from the stage. So it was this fictitious thing that was covering up the real thing, and it projected sound. Well, person, and you can look in a law dictionary, it's actually it can be a corporation, association, all of these different legal entities that aren't really like a living, breathing man. It has an alternative meaning when you're speaking it in the language of their law or their codes. So when you adhere to being person, you're adhering. It's the same thing as in the Wizard of Oz. In the Wizard of Oz, actually, that's the story of the Federal Reserve. It was, you know, Dorothy finds herself in this sort of colorful, fictitious land, and along this yellow brick road to the land of Oz, she meets a man of straw who did not have a brain, and then she meets a man, a tin man that was an empty vessel that didn't have a heart, and then she meets a cowardly lion. He didn't have any courage. And this is a representation of the American people. The tin man is the TIN, tax identification number. All of this stuff is right there in the movies. It's been right there, even in The Matrix. The Matrix is, I mean, it's just art imitating life, imitating art.
I don't know. I've been watching TV for 20 years, so.
I don't really watch television, but I do pay attention to, you know, to a good movie that has a, you know, a deeper metaphysical message. Most of that goes over the public's head, it seems like.
Yeah, I had my son started acting like Bart Simpson one day, so I took our TV out on the porch and I've not watched one since.
Well, yes, they don't call it the boob tube for nothing. I call it the tell lie vision because that's all I hear out of that thing is a bunch of lies.
Right.
It's just an electronic hypnotic drug. But, I really respect what you did in the court, Jeff, and, you know, and the way that you went about it with humility with your with the attorney. I didn't choose this time when engaging with these people to hire an attorney, but I made two special appearances at their courts, and I never admitted to being the name that they were calling because those are all state records. I never admitted to being that person that they say.
There's a whole school of thought about, you know, a group of people who refuse to step beyond the bar, you know, and there's a reason
right.
for that. You know, our justice system in America is actually, it's an English system or a British system.
British, yeah.
When you step behind or beyond the bar, when you step past that railing into their courtroom, you're, you know, by doing so, you agree to step into their ruling court, which means,
well,
you know, you're subject
yeah.
to their order. I seen a lady like what you were saying about not, you know, not acknowledging that you was the person that he's talking about. I seen a lady once, she walked right up to the bar but refused to step across it, told them that she didn't believe they had the authority to govern her. And not really
well,
sure how that case is going, but I know it's still in motion.
Mine's still in the process, too. I'm about to serve about 30 of the public officials. They're all in the wrong, and by the power and authority of the Holy Spirit, I will have victory over these people and their fictitious nonsense. The last time that I appeared at their court, there were 14 witnesses who came with me, my family and friends, because they don't allow electronic recording devices. And so I decided that I would bring witnesses. And so there were, you know, 14 of them, and they were all in there. We were the only people there that day, and they were all praying and just projecting love and light, bringing that light into this place of darkness or whatever. And the man, acting as the judge, calls that name. And I just, you know, before I even went, before I went to court that day, I counseled with spirit in meditation. And because I was nervous about going, because of what had happened the month before, and this time I was going with witnesses, and you know, like, I know who I am, and I know that I'm not this person that they want me to adhere to being, this subject of their rules and laws, and or their statutory codes, rather, their magic spells. And so Spirit told me, you are a being that is filled with my spirit. There is not a man walking that has authority over you. You know who you are. Go there. Look that man in his eyes. Maintain eye contact. Leave your ego at the door. Speak only the truth. Only say what needs to be said, and that's all you need to do. And so, you know, that it brought a lot of, like, comfort and confidence to me, that knowing that Spirit has my back, rather, and that I was going with spiritual people to this place. And so when this man was calling the name and I didn't respond, I just kept looking at him in the eyes. And see, I had been there the month before, and he had me placed in handcuffs. And put me on the bench until he had cleared the courtroom, and then he, you know, called me and my brother back up there, and then he held me for additional bond funds or bail, to pay bail, and the bail bondage place, and so they extorted further funds from me for no apparent reason, because he asked for urine. He asked for a sample of my urine, and I told him that I won't be compelled to, you know, give you some of my urine under threat, duress, coercion, and intimidation. I said, is it a request or is it an order? And he said that it was a request, so I denied his request. And he put me in handcuffs and extorted additional bond funds from me. Fast forward a month, I'm back there with witnesses this time, and he's calling the name, and I didn't respond, and he just kept trying to call the name, and it wasn't working out for him, because he's not saying who I am, so why would I respond? Eventually, you know, I stood up, and I told him who I am, and that I'm here about this matter, you know, to find remedy and relief to this matter. And I walked up, I approached the bar, and I started to open the gate, and then I shut it, and I stepped back, and then I invoked all of my rights at that time. I said, I'm going to cross into this bar, but I'm not entering into your foreign jurisdiction. I'm claiming all of my inherent, irrevocable, non-negotiable, unalienable rights forever, waiving none, without prejudice. And he threw his papers down on the thing, and he got all red, and walked up toward the, with about 10 feet in front of the bench, and he said, are you Anthony blah blah blah? And I said for and on the record, I am Anthony. And I told him my given title and family name, and then he said, well, are you this and this, you know, kept trying to get me to adhere to that name, and he wasn't getting anywhere. And so he then says, well, if you're not so and such and such and such, then you need to go and sit down. And so he had given me an order, and so I just kind of stood there smiling at him and just projecting love and just staring him in the eyes, and I didn't really move, and then I just sort of, like, at some point on my own dictates, I went and sat down on the other side of the bar. Actually, I didn't go sit down. I walked to the other side, and I remained standing. And he started yelling, ordering me to sit down. And this is how they establish their authority over you, to give you an order, and then you have, then you follow the order. So I didn't sit down, and he was screaming, "Sit down, sit down." And I never sat down, so I just, and then he called, he said for his bailiff to call for backup, that they may need to arrest a whole bunch of people this morning, namely my family. So while the deputy went for backup, I just grabbed all of my authentications and things, and I walked out, and I went out into the foyer, and the deputy came running after me. And he comes up on me, and he gets, like, right up in my face, and he's screaming at me, you know, "You need to get back in that courtroom right now." And I just, no, I don't. "Yes, you do. You need to get back in there right now." "No, I'm not the person that you're looking for, that you're wishing to contract with. I'm sorry. You need to get back in there right now, or I'm going to put you under arrest. Would you... What would you be arresting me for? Have you witnessed me commit a crime?" "Well, I'll arrest you for contempt." "Will that be civil contempt or criminal contempt?" And he couldn't determine which sort of contempt, because he's not qualified to make legal determinations. So he could make a determination. So I asked him, "Are you a public servant?" He said, "Yes, I'm a sworn deputy bailiff, such and such and such and such." "Okay, then in that case, I don't consent to you trespassing upon me. You need to give me 3 feet and keep your hands off of me. Do you understand me?" And he backed up 3 feet and said, "I'm not going to touch you." And then I let him know, if I choose to go back into that courtroom, it'll be in good faith, and it'll be upon the dictates of my own conscience. And
can I interrupt for just a second?
I
want to throw a shout out there for Flex Your Rights. Find them on Facebook. It's an organization that they're pretty much dedicated to giving you the do's and don'ts for interaction with law enforcement officers, what Anthony there is talking about is a really good example of what rights police officers actually do or do not have when they're having an encounter with you. So,
all right. You have the right actually not to engage with them.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Well, So either way, I returned to the courtroom briefly, and this is the I said all that to lead up to this, to prove about the person, okay? Because I put a glitch in their matrix. I walked back into the courtroom, and I stood there, and the acting judge, said to the bailiff to go out in the hallway and call the name 3 times, to summons the name. So he went out and he summons the name, and nobody. You get it? No body appeared. And so he comes back in, and the judge swears him in. "I so-and-so do solemnly swear that I called his name 3 times and no body appeared." That went into the record. And then I'm standing right next to this deputy, and the judge looks me in the eyes and said, "Well, if you aren't the person such and such and such and such, then you are free to leave." And so I left. However, since there is a bond, which I signed this bond under threat, duress, and coercion, or the laws of necessity, the bond, they issue a warrant for that straw man. They issue a warrant, and then they'll want to come and capture you. They'll want to come and, like, kidnap you. That's what they do. They put you in bondage, and then they'll come and capture you. And so in this whole matter, I'm discharging the discharging the amount of the bond to the bond of the man who assaulted me. On this, I was the whole thing. I was assaulted. I didn't tell you what led up into all of this stuff, but it was after returning from ceremony, after leaving ceremony, my brother and I were assaulted by police officers at the end of a laser-guided taser and taken into their custody and sprayed with chemicals, you know, just kidnapped by pirates. It's no different than back in the Western days when the bandits would pull over a stagecoach and rob them for their loot.
I believe it's USC 232 and 233 or something along them lines in that neighborhood anywhere. The Constitution talks about, you know, if law enforcement officers, you know, basically break the law while they're enacting their jobs, then they're no longer considered law enforcement officers. They're considered domestic terrorists.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's what we have, and yeah, that's what we have in this case. And so by the laws of necessity, I have taken it. I'm doing this entire thing on my own with no members of the Bar Association's help. All of, in my view of it all, the members of the Bar Association, they're all officers of the court. They all have a first duty to the court, not to the client. I mean,
that's true. And that's exactly what that section of the Constitution states, is that, you know, they have a sworn duty to uphold the law, and if they do not do so, and if they use the law to enact illegal actions, then it doesn't matter whether it's a judge, a juror, a prosecutor, defendant, they can all be prosecuted, you know?
Right. Well, you know, Jeff, being that you're the founder or president of a branch of the Aklava Native American Church, or even all of the members of the church really can act as counsel for someone who, you know, is also a member or wants to be a member, whatever, that's going to their, you know, has one of these kinds of charges, you know. Because of that, because of the membership with the church, you're adopted into those spiritual communities. So therefore, it is a tribal government. And it's a federally recognized tribal government. And
yeah.
So therefore, you could be an ambassador or a diplomat. You would be able to act as counsel for someone, you know, because they say that they have to be licensed to practice law. Well, Jeff, you and I both know that we live and breathe the law. We're lawful,
yeah,
law-abiding people.
I kind of want to quote one of the Tenth Circuit Federal Court judges out in Colorado. He says, you know, you read any 10 books on one subject, you're considered an expert.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm an expert in several things, then, because I read a lot of books.
That's like saying you're a medicine man because you visited Rolling Thunder once or twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with the church to be considered a medicine, what James calls a medicine person, a medicine man, there's a training that comes along with that. However, you know, like, I've come into this work, you know, just by being called by the plants themselves, you know, and I think that I know a lot of people do. I mean, I've mostly worked with ayahuasca medicine and other types of, I mean, you know, I've worked with various different medicines. I'm well aware of them all.
Well, you know, I've been walking this good deal for a lot of years, and truth of the matter is, I've only ever met about, maybe three, maybe four, you know, people whom I would consider medicine men, you know.
Right.
There's a big difference between, you know, walking the medicine path and someone who you know, like one of my brothers, you know, reach in there and pull that cancer and stuff right out of people, you know.
I think you want to make sure that the audience knows that there's a legal term called native religious practitioner, which are three magic words, too.
Yeah, native religious practitioner.
Yeah, that's the way it was set up.
Yeah.
And, you know, the law just says you create an ID card in private, in camera, and if you say you are, that's what you are. And, At least shows intent, you know, before the fact.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's what I do. That's actually,
you know,
what
the United Nations in their Declaration on Indigenous Peoples' Rights. You know, they put it pretty square and in a way that we can understand. You know, they said Indigenous peoples have the right to practice and revitalize their cultural traditions and customs. This includes the right to maintain, protect, and develop the past, present, and future manifestations of their cultures, such as archaeological and historical sites, artifacts, designs, ceremonies, technologies, and visual and performing arts and literature. That's Article 11 of the United Nations Declaration on Indigenous Peoples.
Yeah. Well,
what is that again? What is it again?
Hang on a second. It's the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. That's Section 11, Article 11, and Article 12. Article 12 says Indigenous peoples have the right to manifest, practice, develop, and teach their spiritual and religious traditions, customs, and ceremonies, the right to maintain, protect, and have access in privacy to their religious and cultural sites, the right to use and control of their ceremonial objects, and the right to the reparation of their human remains.
There it is. How very convenient.
Yeah.
It's just really, I guess, about comprehending that or seeking that out, you know.
Earlier when I said the laws are set up for us to be able to practice these, the laws really are set up. What it is people get in there and they get in them lower courtrooms and they get confounded because Just like Anthony was saying, you know, it's a magic show. It's a big magic show. They get up there and they blow smoke and mirrors and they intimidate people. And they talk you into believing that you don't have the right. Well, the truth of the matter is you do. The Creator gave us these rights. Nobody can take these rights from us. They are inalienable.
Have you ever noticed how in a courtroom that the judge will sit up high, higher than you, and then if there's a jury, the jury's about halfway up in a box, and so they create this illusion at, like there is not equal standing, that they're standing over you in some way.
Remember earlier when we talked about
how goes back to monarchies
ceremonies.
Say that again, Justin.
Earlier in the show, I don't know if you were listening yet or not, Anthony, but we talked about when we sit in these ceremonies, it's a big circle. And the reason it's a circle and nobody's above anybody else is because we're all equal. We're all five fingers. You know, we all
we're
put
all
our pants on the same way.
Yep. It's a beautiful thing that's manifesting here right now. I'm feeling it real strong. Like, good,
you know,
thing.
I want to ask people, you know, Anthony has chosen to take a legal course in action, you know, to stand up for his rights. And he has, legally speaking, he has that legal right to do it in the exact manner that he has. And that's why I told people they should check out that Flex Your Rights. It's a good little link for a lot of information on what legal rights you as a citizen have. You know, and
well,
the truth of the matter is you have a whole lot more rights than the establishment wants you to believe.
And the thing about the rights also, Jeff, is that you have the right to claim all of your rights, and everything that they're forcing upon someone, all of their statutory codes, rules, and regulations, all of those things are based upon a presumption. And so when you can remove that presumption and dissolve that presumption and also claim your rights, that's the proper way of claiming. I mean, that leaves especially when you properly serve it with, you know, it's notarized and, you know, it gets served to the proper people.
Well, you know, when I stood up in court, you know, and it was for the spiritual use of the cannabis, the idea behind that was that you know, and this is what I recommend, you know, for those that do have authorized participant cards, you know, when you come upon that time when you're going to be infringed upon by the legal authorities, if you will, my recommendation is to be peaceful. You know, don't cause issues. Learn what rights you do have. Use them rights. Stand up for them. When I went to court, I went in there knowing that I was subjugating myself to them legal authorities. You know, and I stood up, and the concept was that my intention was to go to the Utah State Supreme Court and, you know, make a legal ruling. The ironic thing is although my case is a lower court, from my understanding, the first legal ruling regarding cannabis as a sacrament with the Native American Church, you know, that sets precedent. It gives other people a legal leg to stand on. And, you know, that's what I encourage everybody to do. When you stand up for your rights, do it so that the next person can stand up a little bit higher. You know, an ex of mine and I got involved with Division of Child and Family Services here in Utah. They got involved with my ex-sister-in-law, and they took her two twin little girls away. And we set up a protest, if you will, you know, because they took them children away for financial instability. The whole country was financially unstable, right? And we did this protest, and what we did is we got all these people that was all kinds of angry and ready to fight. You know, they was all ready to stand up and fight, you know, the courts there. I gathered some 34 people together, and me and a man named Tall Horse and James Flaming Eagle, the three of us sat down and in this circle, and we got out our prayer pipes. And then 34 some odd people come up, and they sat in a circle around with us, and we had a great big old prayer ceremony instead of a protest. And for the first time in Emory County, Utah's history, a case went to appeal, and it's still in the appellate process. No other case has ever done that from that county as far as with DCFS. So, I encourage people to go with spirit. You know, sometimes spirit tells us to sit down and pray instead of pick up our knives and go to war. You know?
Yeah.
We've got to choose when to put our faith on. You know?
Yeah.
You know, if you take the S off of the end of the word words and put it on the front, it's a sword.
That's a true story.
It's cool. A word is a tool that you can use, you know, you can use tools for destructive purposes or for creative purposes. It's just about how those tools are utilized.
Well, I guess what you're saying is, you know, at some time in our legal evolution, there at least credence was given to the notion that men were sovereign within themselves. At least enough to get lure people to migrate over here. They didn't mean it, though, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Well, at least there could have been worse people that could have migrated here from Europe.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, if you don't know who you are, then how can you claim, you know, any sort of sovereignty?
Yeah. And, you know, this whole sovereignty thing is the government finds it very threatening. But, you know, it's not like, you know, we're not throwing bombs. We're doing the exact opposite. We're doing what Gandhi did. We're just saying, you know, you can't do that to me. Uh-uh.
No. Right. You're, no. Instead of declaring war, you declare peace.
Yeah, he was a...
You know, I want to point out something. You know, talking about these different legal means of exercising our rights, etc. A friend of mine, been involved with the concept of being able to utilize cannabis legally for as long as I have. We've worked together on a lot of different projects for it, and. Anyway, he got arrested here not long ago. It's kind of funny. Cop went by, they seen him, and they pulled him over. I told him, they says, oh, what are you going to do? You going to go out there and smoke pot with Reverend Gardner? Because he was going out to a place where I've been known to frequent. Well, in making that statement, he completely... turned the whole show into an issue where he was being a domestic terrorist. You know, he had no legal right to pull that man over, let alone knowing the only reason he pulled him over is because he knows me. Anyway, they pulled him over and they searched him. And he had a pipe and some cannabis with him and what have you. And he decided he was going to stand up for his spiritual rights. Now, this man, he is not an authorized participant, but he stood up for the belief that he had from the upbringing that he had, which ironically is from that of the LDS faith. You see, they have this thing in the LDS church. It's called the Word of Wisdom. And if you read that Word of Wisdom, there's actually only one plant that I can think of on the planet that fits all of the things that the guy talks about in that Word of Wisdom. So he went to court and he stood up for his spiritual rights to utilize cannabis because it says so in his church's doctrines. And, needless to say, he got his case dismissed. And they actually got an illegal search and seizure on top of that. So now he has sued the courts because he wants them to reach his pipe and his cannabis, but because they stole it from him. They have a legal right, but so they're then.
Well, that's something else. Well, guys, we've got about 11 minutes left. We can jabber all the way up to the end. Or I've got about 11 minutes of music that everything, you know, well, hey, we can stay or we can go at this point, guys. It's up to you.
Well, before we do cut off, I want to put one more thing out there.
Absolutely.
I'm not really sure who the person was who wrote the article, but shortly after I won my case, a friend of mine told me that if you Googled my name, my case was on the internet. So I did it. I Googled my name, Jeff Standing Tall Gardner, and the very first link came up. It said, worldwide legal use of marijuana. A time has come. So I clicked on that link, and the guy who wrote that article really did know what he was talking about. He'd done his research. So anybody who is wanting to stand up for their spiritual rights to utilize cannabis in a beautiful way, and that's in a sacramental and spiritual way, and I encourage you, if you Google my name, Jeff Standing Tall Gardener, click on the link, Worldwide Legal Use of Marijuana, Time Has Come. Read the article. There's a whole bunch of posts people put on it after it, but at the very end, the very last post on there, I posted an answer to that article. So go check it out.
Ooh. Well, how cool is that?
Yeah, that is cool. Which one is it, James? Or, I mean, Jeff, I'm sorry.
No,
Jeff
Standing Tall Gardener, and there's a link that will come up that says Worldwide Legal Use of Marijuana. Time has come. And it's
Hey, that's an election year. Why not?
Good deal. Yeah. Well, all of this stuff is going to support claims that I'm making, and so you guys pray that, you know, that the courts see the error of their ways and dismiss this thing that I'm presently working on and dealing with, because that's going to open up some new doors. I do feel it further establishes.
Anthony, them three documents that I read earlier, if you go on to the Aqua Native American Church of Huntington's page and you go up to the top, there's a little button that says links. If you click on that, there are them three documents there as well, and they're dated. So a little more of a paperwork for you.
Oh, wow, cool.
Here's the bottom line, folks. When it comes to dealing with the legal system, he who has the biggest pile of papers wins.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, and in my case, my affirmation or my document is 23 pages long so far, and the man's sworn statement about, you know, the whole thing, his perjury actually is about a paragraph. Like I say, you guys just be in prayer about that and blow some smoke to the four directions over it, man, because like this will be something. You know, like part of the thing, you know, in this case with mine is that there were mushroom sacraments that were illegally stolen, basically, and it was a very small amount, just some like less than 2 grams and 0.17 grams of cannabis that was in a pouch of American Spirit tobacco. Was what these people recovered, and so they stole three of the sacraments, and they're claiming that they're, you know, controlled substances or whatever. But this, because of the cases that happened back in the 1990s with me, this particular charge carries a 2 to 20 year sentence. And I'm just not willing to put myself into their, I'm just not willing to do this. I've spoken with several of the people from the Bar Association about it, and they don't make me feel fuzzy at all. So that's why I decided to just go do this thing all on my own, you know, because all they seemed to want was a lot of money that I don't have. And so,
spirit, brother, do it with spirit.
That's right.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, I don't even need any money, you know.
Go with
spirit. Well, you know, they're like Pancho Villa, you know, and you know, and they don't need a badge to do what they're doing. They're, a lot of them are thugs. Was badges.
Yeah. Yeah, they just have a suit and a magic badge, man. You know, I don't see them as having any authority over me. They're not the authors of me. How can they claim authority over something that which they didn't create?
Yeah.
The creator has authority over me, and that's it.
Hey, guys, listen.
Yeah.
Listen. Can you hear it? Oh, never mind.
There's cricket.
Oh, there it is.
Crickets.
Crickets.
I hear a sweat lodge singing back there.
Oh, is that right? Oh, that's what that is. Yeah, it's, yeah. Distant.
Hey, brothers. As much as I'd love to stay on and talk with you, that sweat lodge is calling to me, so I'm going to go crawl in and pray.
That's fine. Hey, Anthony, you want to hang around another 4 minutes?
Sure.
Yeah, you know, whatever you want to tell the people, this is your chance.
Much love, folks. Goodbye.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Have a blessed ceremony,
Jeff. Thank you so much. It's been great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so how is it down at, what do you think down there in Texas? You know, I just want to add, I know something revolving around Texas is going to happen. I've heard this years and years ago about prophecy, just the general, you know, word of mouth around town. And yeah, something's getting ready to happen. And, you know, it's going to be false flag. I don't know whether it'll probably just be, you know, bank holiday just to get our attention. And but I feel like, yeah, they're gonna have to start tightening that iron fist inside the velvet glove, and that's basically been the their attitude.
Yeah, I don't intend to be here for very much longer anyways. I have 2 young children. You know, and I just really feel like what these courts, what they do is they tear families apart. There's so many of our brothers and sisters that are separated from their children over whatever, for putting seed in the ground. Just, it's ridiculous. It's unnatural. It is against the laws of nature. It's a crime against humanity. And I'm just... really empathic.
Had you gotten into the Bible enough to realize that it's mentioned, you know, a couple times in Scripture, is that plant that grows on either side of the river? And
I know it's there.
when the first drug czar, Henry Anslinger, was working for Hoover, you know, he's given this little tiny budget and 16 agents to eradicate something that had grown you know, on this continent for millions of years, and he just pulled out on, you know, I guess he said something about this to in New York at one time in the press, but he said something like, yeah, you know, I was on this bridge and I looked out and, you know, this stuff was growing on both sides of the river as far as I could see. But listen, I appreciate you. They're going to kick us off. Did you hear the little girl say we had 90 seconds?
That she said what?
Did you? I didn't know. I guess it's the host that hears a message that says 90 seconds or 60 seconds. But we'll take it out. Yeah, I'm going to have to go. I'll.
All right.
Well, hey, thanks for calling in. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, blessings. Bye, everybody.
All life is connected. Every single living. Part of the day, flesh and blood.